if you are listening to this, that's right. If you're listening to that right now, you have until Thursday night, November 2nd, to check out our digital worldwide experience on Friday the 13th, part 4, the final chapter. It was a lot of fun. It was a big honking show, talking all about Jason, all those kills that you know and love. And where is the corkscrew? And of course, an after party Q&A where we answer questions from our dear patrons, Instagram users, Twitter, what have you. It was a ton of fun, and you're going to want to check it out before it's gone for good. This Thursday night, it's going away November 2nd. You have until the witching hour of November 2nd. So head to moment.co/wehatemovies. moment.co/wehatemovies, because after Thursday night, it's gone. You missed your chance. It's chained to the bottom of Crystal Lake, and you'll never get a chance to experience it. moment.co/wehatemovies.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On Screen Live. This is our show for Monday, October the 30th. My name is Andrew Jupin, and we got a lot to get to today, so let's get right into it with our birthdays. First up, total legend, Henry Winkler, turning 78 today. Happy birthday to the Fonz himself, Principal Himbry from Scream, of course. Let's see who else we got. Funny man Kevin Pollak. He turned 65 today. I wonder if Al Pacino and Christopher Walken are also wishing him a happy birthday. Let's see. Former professional wrestler and sometimes actor Edge, a.k.a. Adam Copeland. Here's a fancy, handsome photo of him. Turns 50 today, the big 5-0. And, of course, the great Nia Long turning 53 today. Happy birthday to all of them. Bring in some dudes here who are also ready to celebrate the spooktacular season with me, or I guess rather have been celebrating the spooktacular season for a bit here. First up, Eric Siska.
Yes. Oh, we celebrated big time in this house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything big?
Well, you exhume some bodies, bring them over, prop them up.
Sure. You got to do stuff. It, dude. Yeah, you're getting like outside in the cemetery and everything, it's, you know, good. Fresh
it's
air.
Good. It's weight and cardio.
And of course, you know him, you love him. His triumphant return back to On Screen Live, Mr. Steven Sadak.
Yeah, no, I have deodorant now, so I can come back. Yes. I'm glad that issue was taken care of.
It was so bad, we could smell it through the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that the idea?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, now it's fixed, so we don't need to talk about it anymore. We don't need to be worried about it anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean,
just you got the stink lines and everything. Big hello out there to folks in the chat. Kyle Eikenberry, Prestonian, Eddie Failson, Captain McClutch, Slime Siren. That's a good one. That sounds like that's a real sloppy name.
Right, I'm going to be fucking ringing that tonight, right? Because, you know, it's Devil's Night. Which, Steve, right. You know what that is.
My new favorite holiday.
We get the slime out on Devil's Night.
Oh, man. Yes. You got any Devil's Night plans, dude? Well, Eric, you're going waltzing through the tombstones.
That's
what
right.
About you, Steve?
No. I might hopefully get a drink at a bar. That might be something to do.
Oh.
You
know? Hey.
How's that different from every day?
It's not, but it'll be, I imagine, they'll be playing a Halloween movie.
Sure.
It's kind of on them to bring the Halloween atmosphere. I'm bringing my drunken self.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And Eric, as far as your everyday question, Steve and I were literally at a bar yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, you know, keeping the streak alive, Steve. Wow. Maybe I'll go out drinking tonight, too.
Look at you guys.
We got a lot to get to today. A lot of spooky horror recommendations coming. We're going to talk the new Scorsese. We also have On Screen Live's first ever guest.
Ooh.
It's very exciting. We're going to get to that. At the end of the hour here. But first up, wild, surprising week at the box office. We'll talk all about it in a segment we like to call Highest Gross. So like, as happens, like we take a week off from On Screen Live. Last week, of course, we were doing the mailbag instead, you know, and we take 1 week off. These movies are shifting all over the place. My fucking, my Paw Patrol friends aren't even in the top five.
Oh
anymore.
My God. Oh, no. What the hell?
They got put down, dude.
Oh no. Yeah. That's nobody adopted them after a week. So.
Yep.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It's like you either get adopted or you be this fucking dog police officer or you will get put down.
They laid them down on their favorite blanket and then they administered something to numb them a bit. And then the IV went in and.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's how they make them talk. That's how you make a Paw Patrol. It's all like Man's Best Friend with Lance Henriksen. They're pissing acid on Paw Patrol, I feel. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, then they call it the gold watch. Like, oh no, when you retire, you get a gold watch. It's like,
yes. Oh, I can't wait to get my gold watch.
No, just lay down here. And this will be easier for you to get your gold watch. You know what I mean? And then it's just.
Your eventually. Gold watch is more comfortable if you lay down on this blanket.
Yeah, the gold watch is at a farm up in the country.
Speaking of a movie I wish was fucking put up into the country farm and never heard from again, Exorcist Believer.
The body in the blood. The body in the blood. The body and the blood.
That's a movie quote, I guess, right?
It sure is.
It's the fucking tagline on the poster.
Yeah.
Oh, but I didn't know it was in that tone.
A Unitarian's wet dream, that Exorcist fucking believer.
It sucks. It sucks so much.
It's so weird that they did that because, you know, you have Catholicism, the actual religion, the real one.
The one true, for sure.
And then you have like all these clowns come in.
Exactly.
Except these heretics.
The Jews don't get their fair shake. I don't even think and the Muslims not so much, but it's just any other version of like rough Christianity or
Christy. Exactly. It's got to be Christy.
Yeah, got to be on the Christy side of the street.
Yes, and this whole like hands across America, we're going to exorcise these two girls at the end of that movie is one of in terms of like the exorcism scene in the first movie is one of the most famous, best done, chilling scenes in cinema. Think the exact opposite for the exorcism scene in Exorcist Believer. And anyway, I think people are slowly forgetting it here. Week four, $3.1 million. Yeah. That'll be out of my hair soon.
I made more this weekend.
You and your dick were busy.
Over a billion served.
This next one, it's a total, I mean, I might as well play the fucking secret movie theme song for this here, but from the people who brought you that Jim Caviezel child kidnapping movie comes After Death.
Oh, what the fuck is this?
A new one on me, dude.
It's for our good folks at our friends at Angel Studios here, $5.1 million. This is a documentary where scientists and other people talk about what's on the other side.
Okay. At a certain point, doesn't this become sacrilegious to be like, I know what death is.
Yeah.
I kind of think so. Like, you're going to be making the man upstairs sad.
Yeah. Straight to hell.
If Jim Caviezel was in the other one, does that mean Dean Cain has to be in this one?
Well, it's not a narrative. This is talking head documentary.
Yeah, but it's going to have like the My Pillow guy in it or something.
Yeah, one time I totally OD'd on crack, and this is what I fucking saw on the other side.
It's Donald Trump, and he opens up his big arms, and he gives you a big old bear hug, and he's like, thank you for serving me, kind soldier.
And all throughout heaven, all the clouds are made out of my pillows. You don't have to sleep on a cloud when you could sleep on a my pillow. Oh, is that a crack vial? Oh, excellent.
God damn, you should get back on it. He was probably a much nicer guy back then.
Better hang for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
1,000% better hang.
Just take a little just to take the edge off and enjoy yourself.
Exactly. Like, just like do a little fucking toot and then be like, oh man, all that election denial stuff was garbage. Wow, I sound like a real asshole on all those TV interviews. How embarrassing. Fuck that guy. But anyway, so that's that movie. Who knows? It doesn't appear to be the box office sensation that the Sound of Freedom was there. But
that's a shame.
It really is, Steve. It really is. Because I wish nothing but the best for Angel Studios. Coming in third in its second week, Marty Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon. Still doing so, $9 million. It's a 60% drop, which isn't great.
Can I get this on Apple now? Is it streaming on Apple or is it not? It's just straight.
I think
just,
so.
No, and just theaters only.
Yeah, I went to see it second weekend to help out.
Good for you.
Because I couldn't see it the first weekend. I was busy, but
doing your
I'm
part.
Helping out, dude. That I'm part of that percent.
I love that.
That's right. That's right. All these people complaining about the intermission. Like, I get you, but
there was an intermission with you guys.
No. There's not. That's the whole the point of the argument is people are complaining like it's a 3.5 hour movie. Why is there not an intermission? That's up to Marty and Thelma. It's not up to these fucking theaters doing fake intermissions. Fuck that shit. That's deplorable. That's super deplorable.
And I had no idea that that was a thing, and I don't think it needed it. I mean, I did go pee once, but whatever.
And me too. Like, as an adult, you know, you see the movies before, you're like, oh, what are we talking about? All right, seems like we're going to get a little talky here, and I might be able to even come back to my wife and be like, what did I miss? And then she'd be like, more horrible shit happened to this Native American community. Got it.
Yeah. You know, there is something to be said for like the majesty, the presentation of an intermission. You think like Larry of Arabia, 2001, like those movies that had that, but it was like intended that way. If you're one of these indie theaters doing fake intermissions, fuck you. That's awful. That's not your call. And I'm glad theaters are getting fined for it. I am. That's not the game, folks. And like, I know we live in this age of like, well, I can watch it at home and pause it. Then wait, if you can't sit or you don't want to miss 60 to 90 seconds of a movie because you're going to the bathroom, that's fine, but don't make fake intermissions and don't fucking complain.
I could also jerk off at Friday night at Freddy's at my house, but if I do it in the theater, I get in a lot of trouble. Because, because you know what?
Yeah, the Steve Sadek intermission. Where it just, it comes out, he's going at it, and that's just the intermission.
Turn the lights up, it's intermission.
Nobody move, it's intermission, it's intermission.
The floor at Steve's house is sticky like a movie theater. Mm-hmm. You know, like you spilled soda.
Yes. More on that movie a little later, of course. In at number two, Taylor still rocking it with the Eras Tour concert doc here. Another 14.7 million. Now check this out. That brings it to 149 million US and $203 million globally. If it hits over 232 million globally, it beats that Michael Jackson, This Is It concert documentary, which is the highest grossing one of all time. That was one, it came out like right after he died. So all the ghouls were like, let's go.
I think as many records as we can take away from Michael Jackson is a good thing. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
Let's get those off the board.
That's crazy that it did so well after his crimes were known.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
There's a large percentage of the world that just like he's a genius ... and then like you're like, but what? And then they won't answer the rest of it. They'll just say he's a genius.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was, but also
the fax machines.
Exactly.
I was at the Alamo this weekend. I saw The Killer. Uh-huh. Which rules, nice. Which we'll talk about at some point when it comes up in wide release. But there were a lot of girls dressed up for the Taylor Swift thing. It was kind of cool to see like a lot of the families, like little kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, bringing, you know, like big parties, obviously.
So
like,
no one dressed up for The Killer?
I did not.
I was like, oh, you saw a lot of little girls dressed up in bucket hats and windbreakers on?
It's a great Halloween costume. It's unfortunate that the movie didn't come out in time because it's going to be a great Halloween costume one day.
Because it seems like it's an easy one, right?
Yep.
It's like find bucket hat, find windbreaker, find white khakis. You're done.
And a Hawaiian shirt. You're having a great time.
Oh, Hawaiian shirt. Okay. Oh, mm-hmm. Perfect. You can find those. You can find a Hawaiian shirt. Just go to any fat guy store. They're right there.
Yes, my local fats.
Yeah, well, the big fat party animal warehouse, you know?
But and I can say this now that Chris Cabin's gone, Mank, he's done with his Mank sojourn, and David Fincher's back where I want him to be, baby.
Nice, dude. Mm-hmm. You hear that, Chris? Wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. No Mank for you. No Mank too.
No Manking off.
Yeah.
And then so at number one, we'll talk about it briefly in a bit.
This is shocking.
I was bowled over by this. Five Nights at Freddy's The motion picture adaptation of the, I guess, popular video game series.
I had no idea it was a video game series, but look at that number.
$78 million.
That's a lot. But it's you know why? Because, and I don't know why we're just averse to this. People want to watch horror movies the weekend before fucking Halloween. They really do. And I don't know why Saw came out a month ago. And I don't know why, you know, I don't even know what, you know,
Exorcist Believer
came out at the beginning of the month. The Nun, you know what I mean? Like
Paw Patrol.
One of these guys should have been in that slot and fight for it. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I want to be the horror movie before Halloween. Oh no,
They're afraid to fight now. It's like, oh, we can't put anything against anything. But man, who would have thought Five Nights at Freddy's? I guess the kids would have thought who play this video game. It reminded me of that Nick Cage movie that came out a few years ago.
Yes.
So I was just like, this has been done. I'm shocked that this is a sensation.
That Cage movie, by the way, the name of it escapes me. I don't know.
It's Willy's Wonderland?
Yes.
Yes, there it is. I watched that and it's like, it's another one. This is a plague that's going around. It is another, he's not talking in this movie.
Oh.
The whole movie is, he's just like this silent character for the vast majority. I think he's got like, he says a word here or there. So like, it's worse than Five Nights at Freddy's because at least people are talking in that movie. But we'll get to that in a bit. Yeah. $78 million. Check this shit out. $131 million globally. This is the biggest Blumhouse worldwide opening.
Also released simultaneously on streaming. That's what I can't believe. This is maybe one of the most successful cases of that.
It really is, dude. And this is the second year in a row that they've proved this. Because the last two, well, it might be 3 years in a row now, right? Because those last two Halloween movies.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Both went day and date. Yes. And now this, like, Universal's proving, like, you can do that. You can do day and date stuff. If you've got a thing that, like, wants to get people to theater, like horror movies, like, yeah, absolutely. It can be done. I will talk about my problems with that movie in a bit. But yeah, on a $20 million budget, machi machi. That's.
Unfortunately, the message there, I think, and I mean, like, it's cool. A lot of people are talking about it as like a gateway horror movie, like kids will watch this and then watch like become little spooky heads, and that's great. And I think that's a really cool thing. Yeah. But I don't want more PG-13 horror on my slate. I'll be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's not what I'm here for. And that might be a message to the studios, like, hey, look, then everyone can see it. You know what I mean? Like that kind of a thing.
Yeah, we want it rated honestly, X.
Exactly.
Well, X.
Here's the thing. Like, if you want to do PG-13 for the theater, because yes, more admissions, yada, fine. Give me the adult version on Peacock. You know what I mean? Give me the uncut. Give me the R-rated cut, whatever you want to call it. Because, like, I feel like I'm talking about the movie already, but, like, there is one part in that movie that would have been an awesome fucking kill. And you don't see it because it's in silhouette. Yeah. So like, yeah, I get it from a ticket buying standpoint, of course, but like R-rated stuff has also been super successful at the box office. So pick your battles. I guess maybe it has something to do with how the game is. Like, is the game also like more geared towards younger folks? I don't know. I did not know that it was a video game series until I think after I think in the credits it might say like based on the game, but and I was like, what? I don't know. Couple of rad art market numbers here. First up, Priscilla opened limited. What was this? It was on screens.
That's a prequel to Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. That's before she gets her crown. Is that what I understand?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. That is absolutely right. Mm-hmm. It's out from A24. Yep, 133K on four screens. Not too bad. Next Friday, it comes out a little more wide, goes to 1,000 screens, so look for that. And then also, haven't seen it yet, but our boy Giamatti, he's back.
Oh, baby.
In an Alexander Payne movie. The holdovers opened very limited. It was on, what are we looking at there? Six screens, I think.
Wow.
200K on six screens. It'll open wide on November the 10th.
I'm kind of excited, you know? Yeah. It's a little something different.
I'm super excited. He's back, baby. It's like him being set in a sad comedy. Like, I almost watched it this weekend, but it was 80 degrees outside. I'm like, I'm not going to watch a snowy Thanksgiving movie on
in
80 degree shit New York weather. Like I need to be wearing a coat to and fro. Okay. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah, that's a coat Absolutely. Movie. They you, let you know in the trailer. In the trailer, it's like this is a coat movie, okay?
Yeah. So I am super excited for that, but I gotta be wearing a scarf to the theater. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll wait till it goes wide, like a couple weeks into November, see what's what. But yeah, I'm very excited. And, you know, sort of like middling reviews a little bit. So I guess we'll see. But it's fucking Giamatti, man. Got to support the guy. So that's the box office, folks. Now, last Thursday, you guys recall maybe we did a digital show. That was very fun. Of course, we were talking Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Now, the cool thing about this, everybody, is that if you missed it, never fear, because the replay is up right now and you can get it all through this week through Thursday night.
I think once you cross over to Friday Eastern Standard Time, it's going to be gone.
Yes.
It's going to be tied under Crystal Lake and you're not going to be able to see it.
But you know what? Right before Thursday is a great time anyway, because Halloween's Tuesday. This is great Halloween night viewing, Halloween day viewing for you folks if you want.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, no, your thought is correct, Steve.
That's right.
Now, if you're still on the fence, like, oh, geez, I don't know, you know, if I want to check it out or not. We got a little clip package here. A little sort of an extended preview that we're going to play for you.
Does it need any setup or what do you think?
Oh, yeah. So if you guys recall, last Thursday, we did a really fun digital show on Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
And this, you got to set this up, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought that's what I was doing. So what this is, it's a clip of, so we did like a 2-hour show. Mm-hmm. And this is like 4 minutes and some odd seconds of some highlights from that, but not all the goodies, folks, and not anything from the after party Q&A, which was a wild session.
Oh,
we were
God.
Telling some crazy stories, going on some wild tangents there too.
Recommending horror movies too.
And that's talking true. Horror movies as well. Absolutely. So here it is. Here's some stuff that you missed. Check out this preview reel and we'll be back in a few.
Well, in this movie, he's the same age as Ralph, right? The actor playing Jason.
Yes, Ted White. He was 56 at the time of filming. And this guy, I think pretty great Jason, just passed away last year at the age of 96.
Oh, my God. Guys, what we have to do after this after party, and I'm talking to people watching, not me personally. I'm more of a Manson figure. I get you to do it.
Gotcha.
Dig up his body, right?
Okay.
And then you shove a piece of an iron fence into his chest.
Love I see where you're going. I love where you're going with this.
A thunderstorm.
Mm. Yes, it has to be a dark and stormy night. You're totally right. And I mean, don't have any expectations, but just see what happens.
Also call a lawyer. Not, you know, it doesn't have to be a good lawyer, but a lawyer. Just so that you don't call them when you are going to get arrested. This is absolutely going to get arrested.
Yeah, that's your one phone call from prison. Just remember that
a
number.
Lawyer. Just one.
I love the guy, the ambulance guy who's like, he gets just like, what's the emergency? Like, they're all dead. He's like, well, if they're all dead, it ain't no emergency. I'm like, no, I don't know. 10 dead bodies. It's an emergency. I would call that an emergency. I don't
but
know.
That's
it was an emergency.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is. That's lights only, dude. You don't need that. You don't need the siren. You want to put your little lights on? Okay. But I agree with this guy. What's the rush?
They're not getting any deader, I suppose. This series never had it. And this movie almost specifically, like, especially when he escapes from the hospital. You need a Dr. Loomis or someone to be ringing the bell, like, close this town, Sheriff. Don't let any horny teens in. No one's allowed to rent any cabins or otherwise.
But who would that character be? The Bog Master? Who's in charge of Jason? Nobody.
That runs the bagel deli where you on your way into town, like, there's like a little newsstand that you can get a shitty bagel and a fucking newspaper. Maybe that guy would close the town.
We met those people in the first movie. There's definitely a gross little lunch counter kind of thing there. Yep. But I think, though, what's interesting is what we're talking about, I feel, kind of is why Friday the 13th Part 6 Jason Lives is my favorite, because you do have that in the then adult Tommy Jarvis running around like, listen to me, Sheriff, Jason's real. He's alive. Yes.
Come on, Jason, you pussy.
But it is interesting that like the events of 1, 2, and 3 have occurred. Mm-hmm. And then all these kids are like, should we go?
Should we go? Tempt fate. Why not?
Thank you. Thank you. This is what spurs the virgin to sign her own fucking death warrant, Chris Cabin. Because this guy, Teddy, finds a reel of silent era pornography and puts it on. And it is that classic thing that I know I've been around it. Steve, you've been around it. Cabin, I think you have too. Eric, I don't know. But you're at the party and someone puts on pornography and everybody's kind of like, ha ha ha, except the one person who's really into it.
Yeah.
That's precisely what's going on here.
Yikes. The pH balance is way off once pornography is introduced to a party, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. I
mean, if you didn't know who had done, like, if it wasn't as it is, you're correct. It is always obvious. But if not, I would be moved to like start sorting through the crowd. Who did this? Yeah. Who did this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't want to watch out. Can we just put the record back on and not Fatty Arbuckle sex tape? Like, what do I need?
The Three Stooges running a train on a flapper. Excellent.
They're all trying to get in at the same time, like through the doorway.
Oh my God. All right. Well, I'm hiring the three of you to clean my pipes.
Mo shoves the two other together, their boners, their dicks, like bang.
Get out of here, knucklehead. This ain't no DP scene.
You have two cockheads just slammed again.
You don't smack my head, you smack her bottom.
Oh no, the Stooges.
What do you mean, Eiffel Tower? We're in France. We're here. We're in Brooklyn.
They were more brutal than Jason Voorhees.
They were, yes.
All right, Curly, go down on him.
Why are you eating coal? I thought you said we were running a train on her.
Good night. So there you go.
Yes. And I think there's some idea to Three Stooges pornography that maybe we should explore, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Did that clip need any setup, though? Did we need to?
It probably should have had some setup. And if we were to give it, I'd say, remember last Thursday?
Okay, got it. Yeah.
We did this really fun digital show on Friday the 13th, final check. Probably something like that to set it up.
Yeah.
If you don't know what's going on here. That's a bit from the show that you didn't see in that clip.
It's true.
Because we spend some time yucking it up with Siskel and Ebert, making fun of those guys and their review of that movie. It was a lot of fun. So there you go. Moment.co/WeHateMovies. You can go grab your replay tickets there to the show and the after party Q&A. Again, like we said, fun stuff. Great for the spooky season. A great companion if you are planning on maybe watching Friday the 13th 4.
Yes.
You slap on the show afterwards, man. Yeah. Have some yucks with us. A lot of fun. All right. So get into some on-screen stuff here. Bummer that Chris has to miss this because I know he also dug it a lot. But Killers of the Flower Moon, of course. Here's the bad poster once again.
I'm warming to that poster a little
bit. Are you?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. You know, I kind of like the arty background to it, the little paint that's kind of going on.
A little watercolor splatter kind of thing.
Like blood and oil and dirt or something.
Yeah.
Right. There was I couldn't find it online, but I think I saw someone share it on Blue Sky. There was a poster that I believe an Osage artist actually did.
Okay.
And it looked really cool. I wish I could have found that one. Instead of this fucking direct-to-streaming poster, such as it is. But anyway, so I saw this last Friday. I was there at fucking 10 a.m. straight from heaven, breakfast at the diner up the street. I was full of my cheese omelet. And I went in, black cup of coffee for this movie. Ooh,
cheese omelet.
Hell yeah, dude.
Let's do food pairings for Flower Moon. So far, we have cheese omelet.
But like, what did I 10 a.m. Oh, you're trying to actually remember. Okay. Do you know?
No. Wait. No. Sorry. I thought I might have it, but no. I don't remember what I ate that day. That was Saturday. That wasn't long ago.
Oh, we had it's kind of a chain, but it's not really. It's right near the Regal Battery Park, Elvez, that sort of Mexican place there.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you ate there. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now the pressure's on. I got to figure out what I ate.
So you're good. See, that's one of the things too, right? Eat before you go see what will be a 4-hour movie experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I remember I had a Caesar salad.
Oh,
with grilled chicken. Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, look at you. Chicken upgrade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was at a dirty bar, folks. So don't get any, you know, it wasn't highfalutin.
Okay. No. Yeah. So, you know, I saw it on IMAX. I saw it at IMAX on Lincoln Square. You know, maybe that was why I did not get up to go to the bathroom the entire time. Like, I was inside the movie. You know what I mean? Like, just that huge fucking screen for something like this. And I had a cool realization. I was like, large format stuff, whether it's, you know, IMAX or like, you know, the big Dolby screen stuff, you know, each chain has a different name for that kind of thing. Regal, RPX or whatever. It's not just for, you know, Cape Crusader shit. Like,
sure,
watching this bone chilling human drama in the biggest screen in New York State, you know, it was great. I was totally pulled in.
I felt like you were stealing a car with Blackie Thompson. That's how immersed you were.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
cool. I wish I had seen it at a bigger screen. I mean, I went to a smaller kind of indie theater upstate, and it was in, because of Taylor Swift, it was in the smaller theater, and it kind of felt like a disservice. Like, I wanted to see this bigger.
Right, right.
I kind of want to go see it again, to be honest. So
it's we'll me too. You know, unlike The Irishman, I mean, like, The Irishman is less of a harrowing story because it's more of a personal drama about some guy that's a fucking mobster. Like, who cares? Not who cares, but I mean, like, obviously we're telling the American Evil story yet again there.
Right.
But here, it is so, the story itself is so harrowing, but it moves. Like, the way that it's paced is really, really gratifying in terms of just, like, keeping you watching, keeping you invested in the relationship that Lily Gladstone has with, you know, DiCaprio's character, and like the whole thing, and just sort of like her journey versus what De Niro has going on with, I really think it's a really great DiCaprio performance too. Like, him as this dirt stupid guy that has, and I mean, like, I think the movie works because in his brain, he actually loves his wife, and that, I mean, like, which is probably, I would imagine, some, what do you call, artistic license, because who knows who loves anybody, but like, playing it that way while having the ability to do what he does, not just to his wife and her family, but to her people and all that around her, but being stupid enough to just sort of be able to turn that switch off in your brain and be like, well, that's just my, you know what I mean? Like, I still love my wife. You know what I mean? I'm still a good guy. Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I love my wife and I love my family, but my uncle told me to do this.
Exactly.
That's, you know,
really,
what I mean?
It really anchors it. Him, the whole, like, I still love my wife, even though I'm being the worst shitheel possible.
Yes.
Yeah. It really anchors it. And I think you're right, Steve. I didn't feel the runtime really.
No.
It kind of moved along for me.
It did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely did. I think this is the most bone chilling that Robert De Niro has ever been. Like, Max Cady, This Boy's Life, whatever. Like, he's utterly terrifying because it's all this just pure evil masked as, like, he's my best friend.
Yeah.
You know, I want that insurance policy on his life, but he's my best friend and I love these people. Everyone's, you know, all these Osage are his best fucking friend and he loves them all and he's speaking the language. Like, it is such a calculated evil, which is more terrifying than like an open, you know, grabbing Leo and hitting him around kind of evil.
It's like very, this. Yeah, it's sinister because it's like you believe him. You know, you're like, yeah, I think he does kind of like them in this culture, but he's still doing these things. It's just like that double edge. It's interesting to watch a character have those perspectives.
Yeah, people can have two things in their brains at the same time. And I think that's what the movie asks of a lot of these actors is like, no, yeah, you're having fun at this party, but you will eventually steal all their land and murder literally half of these people because it suits your interests. And I think that, like, if I was Todd Phillips, he must have had a Usual Suspects ending when Kevin Spacey starts walking normally, because he'd be like, oh wait, he could still act. I thought that he was just done in my movie. Like in the Joker, he is so shitty in that movie. And like,
oh dude, I didn't know where you were going with this, yeah, because
De Niro
got De Niro's in that movie.
De Niro is just so like unchecked out. You're like, well, that's just De Niro these days. And then he turns in this performance. You got to be like, fuck, yep. I want my money back. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that guy owes me some money. If he could do this in a Scorsese movie, I just think he's fantastic. I think he is
great in this. He's coming out swinging. I think that collaboration matters, you know, versus the guy that did the Gigi Allen documentary. Or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
or old school.
He needs someone like Scorsese and him. There's something to talk about there. I couldn't imagine what Todd Phillips could even say to get a performance out of Robert De Niro.
Yes. No, yeah. How did the guy who did three Hangover movies direct Robert De Niro in that movie?
It turns out he didn't. Yes.
The answer is no. Like, De Niro memorized his lines, and then it was like, all right, I'm kind of playing like a blowhard talk show host.
Yeah.
Got it. Like, you just, like, it is night and day, these two movies, or these two performances. I mean, the movies are too. Lily Gladstone. Just fucking shoot to the top of the
fantastic.
Should get all the awards list. Man, she was amazing. I'm so, so glad she did not give up acting before she was able to be in this movie. And now, like, you know, she deserves all the accolades. She deserves all the roles. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. Just watching this stunning, heartbreaking performance. Like, every shot just, like, shattered my heart.
Yeah.
Well, you're suggesting we might see her on Hollywood's Biggest Night.
I think there's a decent chance Hollywood's Biggest Night will come calling for Lily Gladstone.
And I think
I hope so.
The scene, I think it's when her sister, spoiler alert, when her sister is murdered, when she finds that out, she's in the basement, and that wail she lets out is just like, it cuts through the theater, man. It is just sort of like, it's one of those things where it's like, you feel like, should we leave? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is it? We'll let her deal with. Oh no, it's a movie. That's right.
But Steve, I think that's kind of a great observation, right? Because like, you're so in it, and this is all so personal, and you sort of feel like I should. You know, I'm getting like personal family information that I shouldn't be experiencing right now. You know what I mean? Like, you're at like a friend's house, and like someone gets horrible news, and you're like, I probably shouldn't be here for this. You know what I mean? And that it felt like we were really getting a peek behind, into this family's life. And I just felt like this is horrible and heartbreaking and terrifying. And I probably should go wait in the lobby. You know what I mean?
And I think that like the ending, which somebody, had an issue with in the chat, which we were looking at before, but like the very ending there, which I'm not going to actually spoil what it is, but I think that what works about it for me, what I love is it is Scorsese really like openly open hands being like, this is yet another retelling of this story. You know what I mean? By a mostly white creative team.
Just want to be clear. That's a great point.
And that, and he literally comes out and is just like, that's what you just watched. You know what I mean? And like this, it's in a long history of this. There's probably going to be more, hopefully, et cetera, et cetera. But like, it is a really interesting way to sort of tie that in and have not a mea culpa, because I think that, he deserves to make that story because he worked on it so hard and he smartly said it from a white perspective. So that sort of allows him to sort of operate in that world. But at the same time, like, I think it is just sort of like a little bit of a, like, this is where we are. You know what I mean? This is what this is kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. And I think it also sort of also winds up speaking to like our, endless grim fascination with true crime.
Yes,
and like,
exactly.
Look for how long people have been eating up stories like this, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you start to think like, why? And it made me think like literally like, why am I sitting in this theater, watching it? You know what I mean? It just, it makes you start questioning all of this stuff. And yeah, I think it is him being like, hey, I've heard the concerns. I totally understand it, but here's me in the perspective because also some fucking totally great cameos in that last bit too. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the roles, I got to tell you, there is nothing more satisfying than a 11th hour John Lithgow sighting in a movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, it was great.
I did not see that coming at all. I thought it was really great. Fraser, totally great. This is like pre, you know, the whale, you know, him losing all that weight. He's still big guy Fraser here, but he brings it, man. I think I was reading some people were having problems with his performance. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was fine with it. And it's not like he's in it a ton, but he is a ton in it.
Oh, come on.
But he's great. No, it's just like, I just like his big booming, like, really worked. It really worked for me.
That and No Sudden Move, the Soderbergh movie. He's that, like,
yep.
It's like weird Orson Welles period, which I know it's not healthy for him, but I could take a little more of that, my friend.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the whole stuff with Lithgow, man, yeah. It was kind of weird because, like, the next most recent thing I'd seen Lithgow do was when he was on that first season of Perry Mason, also playing a lawyer.
Yeah.
So this is like his weird, like, lawyer period, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he's so great. He's so fucking great in the movie. All the people that just sort of populate this movie. Like, I don't know. Look on IMDb. Look through that fucking cast list. It's amazing. It's a treasure trove of amazing performances. I don't think I could single out like a weak one in the bunch, like no matter the size of the role.
Yeah. Even like the small characters like Blackie Thompson, who I mentioned earlier, like I believe that guy is a little evil shit or whatever. Yes, just from that performance.
Right.
No, yeah. And all the Sturgill Simpson was really good in this.
Yeah. Like, dude.
Little stuff like that. And I mean, like, it's sort of like, it's one of Scorsese's least ambiguous movies because like Goodfellas, you're watching it, you're kind of yucking it up with the mobsters while you're watching this sort of moral rot unfurl. This is just, you feel gross the entire time. Like, there's no these are the party days. Like, the closest you get to that is the Native Americans in the beginning actually experiencing the joy of finding all this money, which is sort of like, that's like the closest you get to, like, we're all going to live together and fuck tonight kind of a thing,
right.
Which is a Scorsese staple.
Yeah. I would love to have had, though, the Irishman titles for all of the fates of these people come up in this movie. Like, this fucking racist piece of shit car bomber, this is when he died in jail. Like, or what, you know what I mean? Like, give me all that stuff.
Throat cancer.
Horrendous automobile accident while battling throat cancer.
They did a little bit of that wrap up in the ending thing.
I just, there is something about, like, the way it pops, but that's why it's not, right? Because the way it pops up in The Irishman is kind of funny. That guy, the guy in this who's also in The Irishman, who gets shot in the face in The Irishman really kind of comically, that guy, like, I don't know that I've seen him in anything else.
The skinny dude?
Yeah, the skinny guy who is the car bomber guy, I think.
Yes, he is. I forget. He's somebody's brother. I forget. Like, he's a little bit of a Hollywood royalty. I'll look it up.
Got it. So real quick, because our guest is here ready to roll, I will just say, Five Nights at Freddy's, man. Like, yeah, if it's for children, fine. But it was not for me. And I gotta say, Emma Tammy, the director, directed a really great horror movie several years ago called The Wind, which is like this frontier times. This woman is alone in her house and her husband's like, I gotta go off to the other side of the valley to go pick something up or whatever. BBL. And then it's like, oh, is someone here like fucking with me on the prairie while I'm all alone in the middle of nowhere? Amazing vibes. None of which found in Five Nights at Freddy's, I have to say. It did not work for me. Josh Hutcherson, bless his soul, just, he don't got the juice, man. I'm sorry. And it's just like, these animatronic robot coming to life movies, like, the thing, I guess, for me, why they don't work is, like, these things aren't talking. You know what I mean? They're just not. There was that the Joe Bagos horror movie that came out last Christmas where it's like a robotic Santa comes to life and kills people. The guy ain't talking. It's not fucking scary. It's just a lumbering puppet costume.
Even when the Simpsons did it, the itchy and scratchy robots, they were talking.
Shopping mall, the top of this whole pyramid, the very, very top.
Yes.
Have a nice day. You know what I mean? Like, that's
something.
It's something. Just,
anything. Yeah, and also you better believe we're dealing with childhood trauma in this fucking Five Nights at Freddy's. Don't worry about it. In this video game adaptation of the silly little games and animatronic robots, don't worry. Childhood trauma is addressed thoroughly.
Press X to reflect on childhood trauma.
Mash the keypad now to get these bad dreams out of your head. whatever. Stream it on Peacock if you must. That's $78 million fucking dollars, man.
Crazy.
I cannot even believe it. Our next guest is an author who's written books like Party Like a President, True Tales of Inebriation, Lechery, and Mischief from the Oval Office, and Now, an Oral History of Late Night with David Letterman.
Ooh.
His latest book, You Talking to Me, the definitive guide to iconic movie quotes, is out now. Please welcome to On Screen Live, Mr. Brian Abrams.
Killers on the Flower Moon was like too long.
Oh, didn't you? You were so mad there wasn't an intermission. You had to pee.
Yeah. Why was it so long?
This will endear you to the audience. That's good. That's
good. This is my real voice too.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He's doing some character work here, I think.
I've been
listening to you guys way too much lately, so it's just sort of it infects you, and I'm sure your listeners like go around doing their worst. Emmett Walsh or whatever.
So the new book, man, here's the cover. Mm-hmm. Loving this.
Let's see. Eric's got the hard copy. Hal, can you get a copy of this for the folks at home? Let's get a close look on that.
Thank you, Hal.
So Brian, does this book need any setup? Is what my question.
Does it need setup?
Not really. No. I mean, it's good. Just go get it.
It's good. Just go get it.
Yeah. Well,
to pay you a compliment, I mean, you know, some of these you'd think like, oh, it's just When Harry Met Sally and it's like a toilet book or something. But you go into really good context here and you cover a lot of older movies, which I almost wasn't expecting.
Yeah. Well, thank you, by the way. So I think it is a toilet book, but it's like a smart toilet book. It's for like the intelligent shitter in you, you know?
Right. Oh, dude, that's got to be on the next book for the intelligent shitter in you.
Now that I have your blessing, this is living in the bathroom. But this is, I just, you know, you do really cover the context really well of what makes that quote, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you said earlier, it was like, I know what you mean, that you didn't want people to think like this book. So it's called like You Talking to Me, The Definitive Guide to Iconic Movie Quotes. That sounds like, oh, it's just like a BuzzFeed listicle on paper. It's just like a quote with like two sentences or something. But no, I wanted to like analyze and dig into like how, you know, dozens and dozens of these iconic lines have kind of spread and like where they came from. And if there's interesting kind of Hollywood analysis to get into. And I also know what you mean, that like I don't want to read a book that's just kind of a rehash of the top 100 AFI quotes, because it's not that's not really like the quotes that are underneath every household, you know. Like there's a monologue from The Mac where Roger Moseley, like, he gives this speech to his brother, and it's this like obscure blaxploitation movie from 73, but it's been sampled on like 100 hip hop tracks, and I guarantee everyone knows it if you just like YouTube The Mac monologue. It's there and you're like, oh yeah, that's from Dr. Dre. And so like that deserves attention as opposed to whatever AFI members are looking at. Right.
Was there movies that you got to that you were like the screenplay is so banging, there's so many lines, like, how am I going to whittle down, you know, I mean, like Chinatown's one, you know, shit, there's a ton there, or like Jaws, or, you know, so how was that process of like, which line makes it and which doesn't?
Yeah, that was tough. Like, because you want to have a balance. You just don't want it to be like fucking 40 pages of Bogart quotes or something. And so, because Casablanca has like 30 lines, right? But so you just kind of do your best to like, if so the Casablanca entry is about, here's looking at you, kid. Mm-hmm. And I do try to fold in other mentions where I can, if it organically fits in the story I'm telling for that particular entry. Mm-hmm. And then I made a whole section for like The Godfather and Star Wars. And there were some other franchises that just kind of begged for that, you know, because it's just, and it's just a good way to kind of talk about it in a spanning way. And then there were some that like, I just found myself spending tons and tons and tons of time on because I thought they were iconic, and it took me a year to be like, no, Brian, actually, you're just in love with the Pope of Greenwich Village. Like that doesn't belong in the book, you know?
That's gotta be a tough one. I really enjoyed the feature boxes that you kind of have throughout this one that I'm looking at, the Welcome to the Party Pals, which is this kind of just going through Die Hard ripoffs. And you have quotes, but it's also like, you got Passenger 57, Cliffhanger, Under Siege, Speed, No Contest, which is a movie that we've been circling around almost doing forever. The Shannon Tweed beauty pageant Die Hard ripoff movie.
Whoa, have you watched it yet?
Oh, I haven't. No. It's like on my list of like, I need to watch this movie. Is it great?
It's terrible. I'm sure it's on like YouTube, but like this was a very sad moment for the Dice Man. This is like, it came out like 94. Yes. And in the credits, he's listed as Andrew Clay.
Oh, so, yeah.
Right? So he's like clearly, he's licking his wounds from like realizing that his bit wasn't working and he was trying to like tone it down and just be an actor in like the saddest Die Hard ripoff of all time.
Yes, actually, I have seen this. I totally forgot. Now that I see the Robert Davi's in it, it's coming back to me.
That's what kicked it loose, the Davi's
Oh, yeah. Davi's all over this book, by the way. Davi heads.
Oh, yeah. Just Davi quotes.
I did. Hey, I had drinks with him a few years ago.
Really? Tell us
I did an oral history of Die Hard in like 2016. And most people were just down for phoners, which was great for me because you can just get the recorder. We can talk for a half hour. We're done. It's great. Right. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. But he's like, yeah, I'm at the Bryant Park Hotel. Come meet me here. And I'm like, fuck.
Oh, wow.
And so he's terrifying.
Did he talk your ear off about Barack Hussein Obama or anything?
It was 2015 when we spoke. And he's just like, I like Trump. Let me tell you why I like Trump.
Nice.
Of course. Oh, wow. You were one of the very first to get his fucking unhinged, you know, video monologues that he films in his car.
I was just trying to be nice and like as accommodating as possible about it. Cause sure, I'm like, I just want to get Die Hard information from him. So I don't want to be like, well, Trump's actually a piece of shit, you know? And so he's telling me a story about, he's like, look, my grandmother in Long Island, she doesn't understand. Look, you're saying you want to change from a man to a woman. I don't know. Give her a second to understand.
Yeah. And it's just like, so you were the FBI agent in Die Hard. Remember? You're like, hi. Die Hard, the movie we're talking
and
about.
And now he wants to defund the FBI. It's called full circle.
So anyway, come see my Sinatra show when you're done.
You know? Yikes.
Yeah, that's awesome. No thanks. It's awesome.
Another section of the book that I think is it's primo for, you know, right now, of course, we're in the spooky season, the whole Creatures of the Night section. And dude, I appreciate, we've got some universal horror in here. We've got Dracula, we've got Frankenstein, like love the acknowledgement that black and white horror is quotable and good, man.
Totally. Thanks. Yeah. It's dreamy stuff. That's how I think of it. Right.
It is dreamy. Yeah.
And it's hard because it's like, it took me forever to appreciate it as a kid. I'd always like fall asleep, you know, because it's black and white and like I need something like splattering in front of me. But I don't know. I think if you see them on the big screen, if you get the chance, that really does it. And then
for sure.
And then also Freaks. I just love
Freaks. Yeah. Which is now getting kind of a nice little reevaluation. There's like a new Todd Browning like Criterion set that's out. Yeah. That's a part of it too. And speaking of like quotes, you know, where stuff's come through with movies, the Ramones, man. Freaks, Ramones,
yes,
like totally. Peas in a pod. That's really great. I gotta say though, with the horror stuff, what, no Chud? I mean, come on, the memorable lines of Chud.
I got the keys, Bosch.
Hey, Bosch.
What are you talking about, Bosch?
Yeah.
Where's Bosch?
Yes.
Where's Bosch?
What's a Chud?
Good. Yeah.
You know, classic fucking lines.
If I like, but we veer down that way and like, there, you know, if I don't know if there's like an objective story. You could figure out enough information if you really passionately wanted to talk about something, but you do run into a corner if you're like, I really don't got the juice on this one. It can include it, right?
Right,
so if there
right.
isn't like a, if there isn't like a real story you could dig into with Chud, but if I could play by those rules and start including just shit that I loved, then it would be like dirty work.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes. Totally. That's a great one.
Well, so he's dead, you know.
Yeah,
one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, we love that one. That movie, that's like you'd have to put the whole script in here.
Right.
Time totally. To pay the fiddler whore. That is great.
You baby gorilla. I think that there's really what I do love about your book is that it's actual movie quotes. It's not, I mean, like there's actually nothing worse than someone misquoting a movie. Like, it just, ooh, it yep. hits you right here. You know what I mean? And
it, yeah.
Yeah, it just sort of, I love that idea.
But now you could pull this out and be like, excuse me, actually.
Exactly. Right. Your physical yeah. document.
Yeah, so, and I wanted to dig in enough too to where it's like, I don't yeah. know how to explain this without like insulting all of us. Like, I didn't want it to read like it was written by a reference bro. Like, yep. even though like we all have to admit that we are that, like we just walk around and we do sure. that anyway. Like, I just want it to be something you could read that's not like, hey, 19 quotes to fucking or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, yes, exactly. You know?
Yep. Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I was looking over like the rest of your work on the Amazon store profile for you. Pretty like diverse you know, pieces of writing. So what brought you to movie quotes? You were like, you know what? For the next one, movie quotes. Let's do it.
I can answer that. I mean, I was doing pop culture reporting for probably like the first 10 years of my quote career or whatever and in media. And then like, you know, I mean, basically Trump happened and Bernie happened and like just a lot of like normie people who may have just been like Hollywood geeks like you or me or whatever, you'd get sucked into the political space so easily. And so a lot of more generalist writers would just find themselves all of a sudden like, oh, okay, I'm covering politics now and you have to yep. play a hardcore catch up. Yeah. And so that, I mean, the Trump era kind of delivered me into that for a while. And so that's why I did this book on like, the entire Obama presidency, basically. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened and I was lucky enough to start just kind of jamming in a conversation with an editor I knew. And we knew that everyone was like sucking down 3-4 movies a day anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, might as yeah. well get paid for it.
Totally.
Exactly.
That's what we're trying.
What do you think we're doing right now?
Totally. Totally.
So that old, we're doing this anyway. Yeah.
Lots Steve, of security in that too, right? Like none of us have to worry about where we're at in 10 or 15 years or anything.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be in a pauper's grave. Don't worry about that.
So anything that you, now that the book's out, anything that you regret not making it in, or if you ever considered like maybe a volume 2, what is something that I'd put in that I got fucked over and got cut out of this one?
Right. No. Well, every day I'm like, fuck, I should have done that or whatever. But like, it just doesn't matter. At some point you're like, just, I did what I did. It's fine.
Yeah.
But no, if this thing like does sell enough to where like the publisher does look at me again and they're like, oh, you weren't that much of a pain in the ass and this sold well, let's have another conversation. I would want to do TV. Like that feels like the companion piece to do. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'd make it a little thinner too. I think this one's like, but like, you know, film, I feel like film discussion like deserves a little more like oomph.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's that.
Now, do you think movies are becoming less quotable? I mean, you do have modern stuff here, but it you know, and I don't blame you at all. You know, you have like Get Out and movies of that ilk, but not tons in recent releases. And I guess that's might be also because you have to quote, it has to digest for a while. You have to quote.
Yeah. Up. Yeah. Oh, no, I was going to say that too, that like my editor and I, when we'd have drinks after this thing was over, like we did talk about that. We kind of like regretted that it skewed so old. And we were like, we could have like squeezed in some shit that was just like, there is like from the year 2000 on, I mean, there's probably like stories of like, I don't know, 20 lines in there from there, but like it's smaller. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, yeah, I do think because the last 20 years, like movies haven't been at the center of culture, it is tougher to make that argument that like, you know, I probably could have put in like, well, that escalated quickly or something like that. Because there's like a genuine argument made that's like this crazy meme. But I don't know, fuck it. You know, we're all watching the shit we want to watch. People need to know these lines anyway.
I think it's a strength, I think, because there's so much more earlier stuff that people just know from cultural osmosis.
Yeah.
If you were filling it with more modern stuff, it would be a little lost. Like we were just talking about Killers of the Flower Moon. I really enjoyed the movie. Can I quote it? No.
No.
Yeah. Right. No. Yeah. I mean, that's also, I think, part of it too, right? You need like rewatch time. These, you know, the scripts need to like marinate in a person's brain over the years and like what comes out of it. I mean, because like for every quotable line in even like Casablanca, there's fucking 40 that you don't remember, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just, that's part of it too, is you just got, like you said, Eric, like you need it to be like pulled out of the movie through cultural osmosis and just like thrown around.
Yeah. And the other thing, and this is going to make me sound like some crotchety, like Bill Maher fuck or something, but like you, people are like, no quotes from like TikToks now. Like, you know, we don't really like, not everyone gets to like go to the video store every Friday and suck down three movies that are terrible. And yet you watch them front to back repeatedly anyway.
Oh, that was a better time than what we have now. I agree. I'm a crotchety old fuck myself.
Yeah.
Well, the book is You Talking to Me, The Definitive Guide to Iconic Movie Quotes. It's out now wherever you get books. I mean, which for me is Amazon and bookshop.org. And I noticed they're both there. Anywhere else? Is there a place you'd prefer people pick it up or just get the book wherever you can get it?
Whatever's easy for people. I don't care.
Yes. There you go. I like that. Well, thanks for coming.
Actually, there's a vegan feminist shop in East Village that I prefer. No, I don't know.
But thanks for popping on, man. This was great. Best of luck with the book and come back with the next one. All right.
Thank you. See you guys.
Cheers. Thank you, Brian.
Take it easy. All right. So we got to wrap up, folks, just real quick. We wanted to give some Halloween recommendations to y'all. Super quick. We each picked one. Now, Chris had a last second internet failure, so that's why he could not get here. So I'll just say really quickly, Chris's pick was Cure, the Kiyoshi Kurosawa film from 1997. Really, really wild ass movie. Really good. I would recommend you guys check that out. And as did Chris. Eric Siska, quick Halloween recommendation.
Yes, I'm going to highlight, I just rewatched it and it really held up for me, Reanimator.
Ooh.
Yes, the Stuart Gordon, the great Stuart Gordon film. It is just, if you like gloop and glop, it's for you. It's a very cool mad scientist kind of riff, and based on the H.P. Lovecraft story, and Jeffrey Combs is just, I love watching him. I think he's fucking great. After we watched Reanimator, I put on The Frighteners because I wanted more Jeffrey Combs, you know.
Ooh, yeah, I forgot he's in that. I'm recommending Ty West, The House of the Devil, from 2009. I remember you know, when I first saw it, being totally knocked on my ass. Jocelyn Donahue, I think, is absolutely great in it. Tom Noonan's fucking terrifying in it. And a very not yet famous Greta Gerwig really getting hers in that movie.
Mind-blowing scene, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes, Eric, you are correct. It's a mind-blowing scene.
And I think mine will be sort of the companion piece, the goofy one you watch after any of the ones previously mentioned, Ghost House. Also known as La Casa 3. In Italy, Evil Dead came out and they called it La Casa. And it was so popular, Evil Dead 2 came out, they called it La Casa 2. And then they were like, you know what? We're just going to start and we're going to make our own film franchise. And this has nothing to do with Evil Dead. Ghost House, La Casa 3 is, it's basically, it's an Italian movie about a haunted house. It's kind of closer to Poltergeist than anything else because there is a haunted clown that's making weird noises.
It sure is.
It's a lot of fun. It's, you know, your classic overdub horror movie. Great kills. You will not be disappointed if you put on Ghost House for a fun kind of destructo horror movie.
Yeah, yeah, no. It's top to bottom hardcore recommends for all these movie folks. And Umberto Lenzi is the director of that movie, Steve. And
yes.
If you know anything about that guy, you know you're in for a wild ass ride with Umberto Lenzi movie. So yeah, there we go, folks. We hope you have a great Halloween tomorrow. Now, of course, if you're still gearing up, getting all jazzed for tomorrow's big holiday, you want to keep up with the Spooktacular, folks. Available right now is last week's episode on The Purge. We had a lot of fun taking that down. And tomorrow on Halloween, after Devil's Night,
my new favorite holiday,
we're talking The Devil's Reign with William Shatner and Ernest Borgnine.
And if you guys want to watch along, watch the movie, pay attention to the movie. It might be better than you think.
Yeah, absolutely. And our good buddy Ben Wooster drops by for that as well, which was a lot of fun having him back in the studio to do the episode. Now with that, Devil's Reign and The Purge, by the way, you can get those on the Patreon ad-free at the $8 level or up. So you're not bothered by any commercials there or anything like that.
It is designed to be listened to. I'll say that.
You know, it's no interruption.
It's mixed in a certain way on the Patreon. That's the definitive version.
And I know we could have put an intermission into the episodes, but you know, just watching it, listen to it straight through. That's what we intend you guys to do.
But you should also download the main feed apps too.
Also do
well,
that.
Well, yeah. Also. And also, speaking of the Patreon, by the way, so next month, November, it is indeed We Love Movies Month, which means we are flip-flopping everything. All main feed WHM Prime episode slots are going to be replaced with WLM episodes, which means that the $5 and up level We Love Movies episode is going to be replaced by a $5 and up level We Hate Movies episode, where we're talking all about the Hunger Games.
There she is.
There. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
J-Law and Elizabeth Banks and Woody Harrelson's wig. All of that.
And the star of fucking Five Nights at Freddy's himself, Josh Hutcherson, as Peter Mullarkey. all that and more over at patreon.com/weatemovies. Look for that Hunger Games episode dropping on Thursday. So that's going to do it, folks. We really hope you have a nice and safe Halloween. Nobody eats a fucking fentanyl-laced apple or whatever those people want you to be terrified about.
Exactly. Whatever fake thing they're talking about now.
Exactly. And of course, big thanks to Brian for coming and hanging out. Pick up his new book out now. That's it, folks. Have a happy Halloween. We'll see you next week. I've been Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
See, he's back now. Look what happened.
Steve, it took me. What would happen was I would pause waiting for you and you're not there. So anyway, go ahead. You say first.
We're going to Steven Sadek.
Eric Siska.
Have a great week, folks. Bye-bye.